Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I'd like to ask you a question. How fast can you drive your favorite sports car in a dense fog? Just get in mind your very favorite sports car. You're going along on the Autobahn, there's no speed limit. How fast can you drive it? Not how fast would you feel safe driving it, how fast could you drive it? And how fast would you like to drive it? Now, I want you to imagine something. Imagine that you come over a hill and it's a blue sky day like today. White clouds, beautiful day. You come over the hill and down at the bottom of the hill, there's a very dense fog. I mean, it's so foggy you can't see that far. Now how fast can you drive your very favorite sports car safely? You can't. Maybe a mile an hour. Even though it's got 600 and some horsepower under the hood, you can only drive it maybe a mile an hour. You're burning up fuel, but you feel dangerous because something may come along behind you and hit you from the rear end. It doesn't feel safe in a fog. Asking questions is the key to getting your head out of a fog. That's one of its primary roles. Not its only role, but it's one of its primary roles is to help you get your head, your thinking, out of a fog so that you can go fast, so that you can speed up, and you can get to where you want to go. In your outline, you'll see that from my perspective, the number one advantage of questions, of profound questions, is speed. In your favorite sports car, you could go 180 miles an hour. A Bugatti, 225 miles an hour. Land legal. But if you can only go 1 mile an hour in a fog, that's how your thinking feels occasionally. Where you think, I don't know quite where to go. I'm just not clear here. The minute you can come to clarity in your thinking, you can put the pedal down and there you go. There are three enemies of leadership: fog, fatigue, and flirtations. They're the three most fundamental enemies of leadership other than Satan himself, from my perspective. The first is fog, because you can't go fast. The second is fatigue. A great football coach, Vince Lombardi, said, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all." What's easy when you're rested seems impossible when you're exhausted. But if you run around with your head in a fog all the time, pretty soon you're just exhausted. It's more exhausting to drive for an hour in a fog than it is 10 hours in a clear day. Fog in your thinking leads to fatigue in your emotional system. But that always leads to flirtations. Now, I'm not just talking about sexual flirtations with the opposite sex. I'm talking about flirting with ideas you should never flirt with. Like, I think I'm too old for this job. I think it's time for me to change churches. I think it's time for me to quit my job and go somewhere else. I think it's time to move to somewhere else. When you really, if you were rested, you wouldn't think that at all. It's just your exhaustion talking to you. Questions are a real key to helping you clarify so that you don't get your head in a fog that you can't get out of. Second advantage of questions is their profound nature. You want to ask profound questions. The reason is, if you ask yourself profound questions, you get profound answers. If you ask shallow questions, you get shallow answers. If you ask no questions, you get no answers at all. But what is a profound question? How does a profound question differ from an exploratory question or a shallow question? Here's the difference. Let me give it to you in an illustration. Let's say, for example, you are in the outback of some country where they've never seen an automobile. And you get a scholarship to a mechanics institute. And with that, you can make a lot of money to feed your village or whatever you're going to do with it. And you say, I've never seen a car. But they say, well, yeah, but you can get a lot of money. So you think, okay, I'll go. So you get to this mechanics institute, right? Now, you've never seen an automobile, and the instructor asks, the car won't start. What's the matter with it? How do we get the car started? You've never seen a car. How do you even know what start means? But they turn to you and say, you, what do we do to get the car started? An exploratory question, which is a very good question. It's not a dumb question. It's an exploratory question. Is what happens if you push that silver thing in the middle of that black thing? In other words, what happens if you push the hubcap in the middle of the tire? Will that start the car? You realize that's not a dumb question. That's an okay question if you've never seen a car before. That's an exploratory question. If you've never seen a situation before, you're asking exploratory questions, but what you're trying to figure out is how does the whole system of that automobile work? You're trying to figure out how does the electrical system engage with the gas system and engage with the transmission? How does all that work? You may ask 3,000 questions before you understand how the car works. Those are all exploratory questions. But then comes a day when you understand how the car works, and then the professor says, the car won't start. What's wrong? Now, here is a very profound question. Questions don't have to be complex. They don't have to be worded with big language. They can be very simple questions to be very profound. Here's a very profound question. What happens when you turn the key? That's a very profound question because it's the starting point of the entire car's system. So the more systems you can understand in life, how this works, how that works, how this other thing works. If something's broken in it, by asking the question that puts you at the start of the system, it speeds up everything. Once you understand the process of an automobile, you simply ask one question, it's not 3,000. When you understand all of theology, when you understand theology, you ask one question, and it's a very profound question. If it's the beginning of the logic trail. Thirdly, I'd say, on the subject of questions, collect questions. I have a collection of, I guess, 1,000, 2,000. I have never counted them. Many questions. Some of them are my own. Some of them are trial and error refinement, like what happens when you press the hubcap. But I've had made a hobby of collecting questions because years ago I began to see that, you know what? You have never in your lifetime solved a problem that did not start with asking a question. Other than punching someone in the nose, of course. You know, it's like maybe you solved that problem by not even asking anything, but you know what I'm talking about. With any kind of problem you've got, you have to ask the question, what's wrong here? Or who did what? Or you have to ask questions to solve any problem. Therefore, the better questions you have, the quicker you can get to the heart of the issue and solve the problem quicker. No breakthrough discovery has happened without questions. The discovering the light bulb or the transistor or the transmitter or the eyeglasses. It's like everything you've ever encountered that has been discovered started with a question. What happens if we do this? Why wouldn't this work? Have we ever considered this point? It's like those questions are real key to help you think new thoughts as well. Now, when it comes to a hobby of collecting questions, I have a present for you this morning, a gift. And if you'd each take one of these and just pass it around, I'd appreciate it. This is a little booklet that I developed several years ago. It's in its 31st printing. Now, in the U.S., these sell for $10 a booklet. They're $10 a piece. We've distributed thousands of them. We've never had a single person, to the best of my knowledge, send it back and say, oh, that was too much money. You think $10 for this, but no one's ever sent it back. They ordered it. But what I found is that a lot of business people say, I said, have you ever seen my little booklet on asking? They say, right here in my drawer, right here in my briefcase. I refer to that all the time. Whenever I run into something I don't know what to do with, I open that up. Let me just take you through it just a minute. What I've done is to collect here the most profound questions, like what happens when you turn the key, in the key areas that you'll face as a leader. And like personal questions and avoiding small talk. You ever get to a party and think, when are we going to stop talking about the weather and gas mileage? Well, the first list is 10 questions to ask to avoid small talk. The second is brainstorming. If you say, you know what, we're stuck here. I don't know where to go from here. I don't know what else to think about. I don't know how else to approach it. Well, start asking the brainstorming questions, and it'll get your thinking way outside of your own current thought process, and new ideas will come to you that you haven't thought of before. They're very profound questions. They aren't complicated. They're not in Greek or Hebrew or something, but they're very profound questions. And then careering. When you or a friend are stuck and you feel like, I don't know where to go from here. I don't know where my next job will be, where my profession should lead me. I don't know what my career path is. By the way, any of you who are in your early to mid-40s and you start your midlife re-evaluation, they're saying, could I see myself spending the rest of my life here? What you're looking for is your life work. What you're looking for is, what could I see myself doing the rest of my life? And whenever you're in the process of changing positions or wondering, should I change, get these questions out. Whenever you're counseling with someone, they're saying, I'm unhappy at work, I don't know if I should stay there. Get these questions out and ask them. When you're deciding, when you're trying to make a risky decision, should I take the position? Should we move to this other city? Should I buy the car? Should I invest in this investment? Whenever you think, you know what, I don't want to make a wrong decision here. I wish there was someone I could talk to about this, but there isn't. Get out this little booklet, turn to section 4, which is page 12. Ask yourself those questions, and chances are they'd be very helpful. And then interviewing. If you're about to hire someone, if you're in a position at work where you're hiring a new staff person, those are some questions to ask. And then focusing or refocusing your life. Often you'll get to life, at least I have, where I feel like life's just sort of out of focus. I'm sort of in a fog. I don't know exactly where I'm going next. If you get to a situation like that, pull out those questions. They'll be helpful to you. And organizing. Whenever you're organizing a committee or a concept or a project or something like that, ask these questions. It'll help you organize. And then parenting. By the way, I didn't do the ones on parenting. I had a guy who was what I felt was probably the best father I'd ever observed. I said, give me the 10 questions that will help you on parenting. That's what he's in there, Scott Melby. Then planning. Every organization, you're planning an organization, you're planning what to do with our church, what's our plan for next year, etc. Those questions, answer those questions, you'll find your thinking clearing up, the fog going away. And then solving. Many times each year you run into problems that you just didn't anticipate. It's a problem. It's a situation you've never seen before. And you think, how do we deal with this thing? Ask these questions. It'll help you. It'll help you. Then in the back, I basically, let me tell you what page it is here. On page 23, I basically made a list of 10 bonus questions. These are my all-time favorite, personal all-time favorite questions. So if you'll ask those, I'll just run through them very quickly with you. The question, why, is the most powerful question on earth. Why are we doing it? We're going to change. Well, why? Well, why is that important? Well, why is that important? Well, why is that important? Whenever you're in a situation where you can't make a decision and the group starts talking about it for an hour or two, here's your profound question. Well, what would be the ideal solution long term? Cuts the fog like that. And then to gain a big picture, if you could only do 3 measurable things in the next 90 days, which would make a 50% difference what would you do? I use that question all the time. My personal organizer is built around that question. That Steve Douglas, who is the head of what used to be Campus Crusade for Christ, now CRU, he taught me that question years ago. I used it, and I said, Steve, do you ask that question all the time? He said, I don't think so. I said, let me write it down word for word, because that's a phenomenal question. If you could ask yourself, whenever you're sort of thinking, all right, where do I go from here? I got that project down. Where? Say, all right, if we could only do three things in the next 90 days, it'd make a 50% difference. What would we do? It's fun. And you say 50% difference in what? It doesn't matter. 50% difference this year? 50% difference in 5 years, 10 years, in my life? You can expand it out. It's a phenomenal question. It'll start 100 engines with the question, what happens when you turn the key? That one's a great question. And then the best question to focus next year. If you could only accomplish one measurable thing in the next year, what would you do? You're here on sort of a break from your work, from your ministry, etc. You might want to ask yourself some of these questions. If you could only accomplish one thing in the next 12 months, what would it be? My best question to understand your adult comfort zones, what was your life like in the fourth grade? When you were 9 years old, what were you doing? What were you like when you were nine? Age nine is the single most shaping year of a human being's existence, other than major trauma. What you were like in the fourth grade is extremely important to what you are today. It shaped what you are today. I have a video, a DVD, it's available on our website, just bobbeal.com. It's fourth grade. If you're a fourth grade teacher, have a fourth grade grandchild, you might want to get that, because it's really an important thing. And then, how do you plan to make the most significant difference in your lifetime? That's your dream, basically. You say, well, I need a dream. I don't know what my dream is. That's your question. Answer that question. Your dream will be clear. Let's see. Number seven. What three changes in my life would be the most pleasing to God? In other words, if you're wanting to grow spiritually this year, ask yourself that question. Stay away from the question if you don't. Stay away from the question if you don't want to grow spiritually. Because you ask yourself that question, and it clarifies it for you. Most helpful personal question. Of all the things you do well, what do you see as your single greatest strength, and what do you do best? We're going to talk more about that later on today. And then best non-threatening counseling question of a friend. If you sense a friend has got just something heavy on their shoulders, but you don't know quite how to approach it, ask, is something heavy on your shoulders today? It turns the key. It starts the engine. It lets the... Each of us have 100,000 words we want to share with someone, because we've got stuff built up in there. But a trusted friend doesn't ask it at the right time. But if they do, all those 100,000 words come out. So if a person has a lot of burden on them, and you'll ask that question, there it comes. And then my best ever career counseling question. If you could do anything, if you're wondering right now, is this where I belong? Is this where I work? Should I be doing something else? Ask yourself this question. If you could do anything you wanted, had all the time, money, staff, education you needed, and you knew for certain you couldn't fail, and God told you you can do what you want, what would you do? Well, you can see that this little booklet will help you. By the way, we have this co-branded with certain ministries, with several ministries, where my letter inside becomes your letter inside for your ministry, and then my the endorsements or testimonials back in the back page, inside back page, become about your ministry. And if your ministry would like to have these to pass out to college students or to business people or whatever, talk to me afterwards. I'd be happy to talk to you about that. Bottom line, asking profound questions, make a hobby of it for life, so that you've got the best collection of questions to bring to bear when you or another person, someone on your staff, is struggling with something. And the right question at the right time speeds up the process incredibly. And it blows the fog out of your thinking, out of their thinking. I say make a lifelong habit of collecting great questions. This is simply a list that'll get you started on the collection. Okay? I've had a hobby of collecting questions now for what, Cheryl, 25 years, 30 years, at least, and it's been one of the funnest hobbies. It's not collecting coins or stamps or something like that, but it is a great question. When someone asks you a question, say, you know, write it down, add it to your collection, use it a few times, and then when you find out there's a better way to say it, if I use this word instead of that word, it opens up the system better. Make a lifelong habit of it, will you? Of collecting questions. You'll never be sorry you did. Now, questions. What questions do you have on the subject of asking questions? Any? Yes. The question is, if you're suffering a lot and you've got questions you can't answer, what do you do with that? I don't have a clue. And I'm not sure anyone does have an answer to that. But if you come next session, I'll have a question on answering profound questions instead of asking them. No, I'm just kidding. But be sure you're asking the right questions in the middle of suffering. I would, if I were a pastor, I would probably try to develop a few questions like, what is God trying to teach me in this suffering? Like Amy Carmichael, who was bedridden for 20 years? And that was the time in which she wrote most of her profound writings. She may have thought, well, God, why did you put me here? Why did you, you know? But there was a reason for it. So nothing is meaningful without a context. Not one thing is life, and life is meaningful without a context. In other words, what does it mean that I got hit by a car? What does it mean that I broke my back? Where's the meaning in any of this? What does any of this mean? I say nothing is meaningful without a context. There's, what is the context? What's the scriptural context? What's the life context that gives it meaning? And I say scriptural context would be the best place I would go to give it any kind of meaning, this suffering. And then this statement, perspective, which is context, you are God's student, not life's victim. That has been very helpful to me as well as my clients and friends a lot of times. We need to see ourselves here as God's student, not life's victim. Not, oh, poor me, why did this happen to me? But what is God trying to teach me? And that basic principle applies in 10,000 situations, 10,000 elements of suffering. Why haven't I got more money now? Why don't I have more capital now? Why don't I have the income? Why didn't the income come in? What, you know, for our ministry this month? Well, what is God trying to teach us here? So, other questions? Okay, the question is, can you say more about flirtations? When there's fog, we become exhausted and fatigued. That, when we're real tired, we flirt with ideas. We consider ideas we should never consider. Like, oh, maybe I'm not adequate to this job. Well, if you're rested, you feel very adequate for it. Maybe I should change jobs. When you're rested, you would never think of changing jobs. But when you're exhausted, you think, I flirt with the idea. I consider the idea. I toy around. I play with the idea. Maybe I should change jobs. Maybe I should, you know. If you're flirting with ideas you know you shouldn't be flirting with, the key is to become rested where the fatigue goes away and ask the questions which let the fog go away. The question is, what role has the questions in the Bible played in my... I have a collection of 144 questions that are used in the Bible. It's part of my collection. To study questions, great questions, from the Bible, often the questions in the Bible were meant to show principles or show logic or to show truth. And I say just asking them clarifies a lot of situations. And so I would consider going through them many times a year and just ask, particularly if I were a pastor, I'd say that reminds me of a question that Jesus asked. Here's the question, because I think that applies to your situation, or may apply to your situation. But I think there were 144 questions that Jesus asked in the Bible. And they're good questions to look at, study, ask, how would I ask the same thing, learn from. What's the best question you've ever been asked? Let me add some of your questions to my collection and to the group's collection. Okay. Best question anyone's... Cheryl said her favorite question was, would you marry me? No, oh, I was just kidding. The question is, how have you experienced God's grace? Is that the question?
Yes, yes, during my class tomorrow, during last year, because mm-hmm. it really gives like God's perspective, not my mm-hmm. own perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gives God's perspective, not yours. How have you experienced God's grace? Any other questions that you've, the best question you've ever been asked? Or one that's changed your life or been meaningful to you? What would you like to do in your life? What would you like to do for the rest of your life? Yeah, that's defining your life work. By the way, let me give you a little bit of warning. You're a young man. Typically, you don't know that until you're at least 35 years old. Now, you can play with it. You can ask it. You can wrestle with it. You can say, do I need to be trained for it, etc. And you can train for certain things. But when you're 30, 35 to 40, you may find that the training was a setup for something that you never could have anticipated. You could never even imagine it. So there's a lot of pressure on young people to decide, what do I want to do the rest of my life? I say, till you're 35 or 40, don't let it be pressure. Just say, well, I don't know yet. Relax with it a little bit.
Not to be too spiritual, but the question that probably changed my life most profoundly was, if you were to die tonight, would you go to heaven?
Yes.
I'd never been asked that question before.
Yeah.
And as a young man at 19, it profoundly changed my life.
So the profound question that changed your life was, if you died tonight, would you go to heaven? And the second question is, from Jim Kennedy's work, if God asked you, why should I let you into my heaven, what would you tell him? And then go from there. But very profound questions. Those two questions set up an evangelistic movement that still, I don't know if you know that, evangelism explosion. By the way, they're my first client ever, so I've watched them over the years. Still friends with their people. That last year saw 5.7 million people come to Christ, started the conversation with two questions. Tremendous question. Other questions that you've found helpful in your ministry or changed your life or been helpful? How have you overcome such suffering? That's a great question. How have you dealt with such... You know, here's an example. How have you overcome such suffering is a great question that you just ask. A modification of it is, what have you learned through your great suffering? How have you coped with your great suffering? How are you coping with your great suffering? Those are just adapted questions. So once you get a great question like you've given, you can adapt it here and there and just let it ripple out and use it. You can figure out you can use it in a wide variety of ways.